Potatoes are one of the world's largest and most popular food crops. Joining us for the latest installment of our series, Globivores, Food Travels Around the World Since 1492, our food historian, Andrew Smith. Welcome back to our show.
Thank you.
And Chef Maricel Precilla, author of the book, Gran Cocina Latina. And it's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you.
Andrew, where did potatoes originate?
They all originated in the Andes. So
absolutely,
this is
the Andes.
A great topic, but it's fascinating. There are 235 different species of potatoes, and only four have ever been domesticated, and only one do we consume today.
And Maricel, why did potatoes do so well in the Andes?
Well, they were a very flexible crop, and
was the soil there particularly good?
Andean peoples were able to cultivate it at high altitudes and very versatile because they could also be freeze-dried and kept for a long time, like cod.
But you're right. I have to point out that potato means something different to botanists and Andean farmers than the rest of us. What do you mean by that?
What I mean when I say that, I write that in my book, is that it was the staff of life, just as corn was for the people of Mesoamerica, or yuca for the people of the Orinoco and Amazon basins.
Or rice for many people
exactly,
around
the world. In Asia, absolutely. And it had ritual connotations. Festivals and all kinds of religious ceremonies revolve around potatoes. But it was, when I say the staff of life, I mean it was as bread for medieval Europeans.
But Andrew, you point out that only a few varieties were even being used by the Andeans. Well, what was happening with the rest of them?
Well, in fact, I'm sorry to interject here, but if you go to a small farm in the Andes, a chacra, in some places you could see that farmers could plant even 300 varieties.
Oh, really? But you say some of them are poisonous.
Some of them are not poisonous. They are very bitter, and they had to be treated differently. They have to be freeze-dried to get rid of the alkaloids that produce that extreme bitterness. But there are 9 domesticated species and about 230-something wild types. Of course, you know, in commercially, you know, we have a very limited number of those.
Right. There's a very limited number of commercial ones, but there are 5,000 varieties of
exactly.
those that are available. So it's a huge variety. If you go to Peru or Ecuador, you see in a market, you will see hundreds of different types of potatoes, things
especially
that you would not
recognize.
Andes,
especially in the high Andes, and they all have different shapes. Some of them they look like pineapples. And in Bolivia, actually, the ones that look like pineapples are called the potatoes that make the daughter-in-law cry. Because it's the daughter-in-law peeling, you know, making sure that everything is perfect. You know, it was almost like a means of torture, you know, for Andean housewives.
And some of them are so small, they're the size of peas. Yeah. So how similar, Andrew, are these varietals to the kinds of potatoes we put into stews or bake or turn into French fries in terms of shape, color, and most important, taste?
It's a bit strange, but although potatoes originated in the Andes, they were, as a secondary place of domestication was Chile. And the problem with the Andean potatoes were that they were daylight sensitive, meaning they had to have an equal amount of daylight and night. But in Chile, it didn't have that need at all. So it is the Chilean potato that comes into North America and into Europe. And so that is the potato that, in fact, it becomes the world standard. And of course, it has certain commercial varieties, and you create them exactly as you want them. And because they're all cloned, every potato that you consume is a cloned potato, you have them exactly the same as the rest of them. So you really have very few commercial varieties that are there that are successful.
The last time you were here, we discussed tomatoes. Isn't the potato also part of the nightshade family?
Oh, it's directly connected with it. In fact,
I never think of them as being similar.
Here's the unusual thing. You can plant a potato plant. You can graft on a tomato top. You can have potatoes at the bottom, and you can have tomatoes at the top.
And that was a problem, in fact, that it was related to nightshade because people were afraid of the nightshade. And when they saw the leaves of the potato in Europe, that was a problem.
I've eaten leaves. I don't get sick, so maybe it's my unusual condition.
Europeans had another perception.
And there are certainly some historical sources that say that, but the vast majority of historical sources say exactly the opposite. Of course, they're not eating the leaves; they're eating the potato, and the potato is very successful from the instant that it is it migrates into Europe. So from Spain to Italy to Netherlands to Scandinavia, and then of course later to Ireland.
Now, Marcel, you said that potatoes were the staff of life for the Andean people. How were they prepared? They weren't making mashed potatoes and French fries.
They were roasted actually in earth ovens to make something called watia. They were boiled painfully in some cases because at high altitudes, obviously, oxygen is scarce and it takes a long time to boil potatoes. But they had potatoes with everything. And also freeze-dried, which is a very complex process. You get something called tunta or chuño in the high Andes, which takes days to make. You have to, you spread out the potatoes during the day. And then at night, they will freeze. And then during the day, that the cells will break down and all that, all the bitterness will leach out. But that's a process that is repeated. And then women will step on the potatoes to help on the process. And this is something I have done. I did that in Lake Titicaca during the harvest. And it was amazing.
What's gained by that?
What is gained is that the potatoes lose all the the liquid. They dehydrate. And then they dry because the sun is very strong. And they become like stones, and you can keep them like salt cod for a long time. And then you process them. You have to rehydrate them, and then you cook them like any other potato. But the taste is very different. It's almost alkaline.
In addition to what Maricela said, mm-hmm. they also ate them raw as soon as they were picked. And that's strange for most of us. We can't eat a raw potato. We've got to cook it. We've got to fry it. We've got to do this.
That I have never seen, but I imagine that some varieties that are sweet, could be eaten
I've eaten raw potatoes.
Well, our potatoes today are different than the ones of historical nature, but the historical ones, there's lots of evidence that, you were hungry, and potatoes grew in the Andes when nothing else or very few other plants did.
Very few tubers. Very few.
So it was a tremendous success in terms of the Andean civilization.
My guests are Andrew Smith, food historian, Maricel Precilla, who is a chef, author of the book Gran Cocina Latina. We're talking about potatoes, which became a major part of the Colombian exchange. But you said that when they came to Europe, Europeans saw them as dangerous. But it wound up becoming such a major part of the European of various European cuisines. How long was the resistance?
There wasn't much resistance. There are certainly some accounts that say the potato is poisonous and you can't eat it. But the vast majority of sources say exactly the opposite. I mean, the potatoes were not – Europeans didn't run into them until the 1530s. And within 50 years, you had potatoes growing in Spain and Italy and in parts of France.
And, in fact, in the Canary Islands, that was the first point of entry.
Well,
and then it was taken to the Seville, Andalusia. But
the source of tortillas in Spain.
And the food of the poor, let's say in Galicia.
They were poor. That's exactly mm-hmm. right. They were poor food. And so they didn't make it into the cookbooks, and they didn't make it into a lot of other things that are there. But the resources are there saying people were eating potatoes relatively early on.
And then poor food because they grow so easily?
Absolutely.
You can have as much mm-hmm. as 200 or 300 pounds of potatoes from a single plant.
It's a very efficient plant.
Until there is a potato famine. But Ireland built a whole economy on it because it was just so easy to grow?
All Northern Europe did. I mean, that's the amazing thing. And the potato famine actually was a problem not just in Ireland, but in Netherlands and in Holland. And 300,000 people lost their lives there. But it's the Irish that end up with it because of the tragedy that ended up there.
Now, when did people realize it could be converted into alcohol? Isn't it often a basis for vodka?
It's not today, but historically, if you couldn't grow grain, which is much more efficient in making alcohol, you did. And of course, in Poland and in Russia, they did make a vodka for a while out of potatoes.
Now, Maricel, if I wanted something that would be similar to an Andean potato, would I be able to find it in my local green market?
Well, when I was working on the recipes for my book, I asked myself that question, and I investigated. I went to Peru, I went to Bolivia, and really talked to people and cooked with them. And what they want in a potato is something very mealy, very dense and very mealy. Sometimes they want a yellow potato, but it's not just the color, it's that density. They don't want something waxy. They want something very mealy. So by talking to Peruvians and Bolivians and Ecuadorians here in the U.S., I realized that their favorite potato was the russet Burbank potato, which has that same level of density. It's not as flavorful as potatoes that you would find in Peru or Bolivia, but it does the job very well.
But I'm going to quote Burbank. You say, I find it ironic that heirloom potatoes have achieved gourmet status in the United States at a time when people in the Andean towns and cities are eating fewer and fewer varietals.
It's happening. It's happening in many places, but at the same time, there is a process of revival, and there is a center, the International Potato Center in Lima, that is doing an incredible job, and people like Carlos Ochoa, a very famous Peruvian taxonomist and breeder, who really did incredible work in protecting some of these heirloom potatoes and promoting, you know, their cultivation all over Peru. I think that there is a revival and a reappraisal of this incredible treasure.
But there's certainly more varieties of potatoes available today in green markets than was true 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
And so, you can look for something that if you want to do an Andean dish, you want something very compact, very mealy. You don't want a waxy, a red bliss. You don't want a red bliss potato. And even Yukon Gold will not do the job for a dish that calls for a yellow potato. So it's better maybe to boil a russet Burbank and then knead it, if you're going to do a puree, with some achiote-infused oil to give it that beautiful yellow color, and you're fine.
Yeah, now, where did these heirlooms come from? Because America pretty much became a potato monoculture. Did we go back to the Andes and find these potatoes that we now call the purple ones and all of these other potatoes?
You could always get them through seed catalogs. And today, with the internet, you can get anything that you want. And so the more unusual, I mean, potatoes come in all different colors and all different shapes. And there's just an incredible variety out there.
Now, Maricel, we know the basic ways we prepare potatoes in this country. Are there certain ways we should be thinking about doing it that we can learn from other cultures?
Something very simple is something called causa, which is very popular in Peru. And it's a cold potato puree that you create terrines. You know, you create layers, you know, with different, other ingredients like, you know, tuna fish or anything else, maybe, you know, crab or lobster. And you create layers, and then you top that with a mayonnaise. It's very typical of Peruvian cooking. And I think it's that the idea of eating a cold potato puree is very alien to a lot of people.
But it's
the chunks of potato, and it's normal for us. But a puree that is served cold or at room temperature is alien, and I think it's a great idea.
Did you bring some? I was thinking. The advantage of the potato from the American side to it is it's absolutely bland, and you can add any flavor that you like. So if you like salt, you can put salt on it. If you, you name whatever
put
flavor.
Put the gravy on the mashed potatoes.
You can put gravy on it.
And the idea of cooking something like a stew, a braise, and adding potatoes so that, the juices will be absorbed by the potato. It's something that we do all the time in Latin America. It's a great and simple idea.
If we don't have a root cellar, what's the best way to store potatoes?
To store potatoes in a cool, dry place that has good ventilation, because you don't want light.
So you don't want to put it in your refrigerator?
Not at all.
No, you don't. You don't want to save them for more than a couple months. That's the maximum under the best conditions.
But have you been able to eat any potatoes raw here, or is this something?
No, it's not in my culture. I don't eat raw potatoes. I don't. But, I mean, I rather, use a freeze-dried potato from Bolivia or Peru. It's my normal.
And what about skins? The skins have a lot of the vitamins.
It's not the skin. It's the
right
layer.
Underneath
it's
the skin.
Underneath the skin. So, therefore, that's why you have to be very careful when you peel. You don't want to destroy that. That's why it's good to have, to boil something, a potato with the skin. And also, I like it. I think it's very beautiful.
Virtually all of the nutrition is in the skin and the layer right under it.
Right under.
The rest of it is just starch. But we like starch, so we're not opposed to starch. But if you want nutrition, you really have to have the skin and its layer immediately below.
So baked potatoes with skins on.
Fantastic.
Or potato soup is good.
I never peel a potato. I just love the way it looks.
I don't understand why people
rustic
do
and wonderful.
Peel them. So, I mean, to me, it's great. I like
because we peel other things.
So. Thank you both so much for talking with us on today's Globivore Look at the Potato. Andrew Smith is the author of numerous books, including American Tuna and Drinking History, 15 Turning Points in the Making of American Beverages. And Maricel Precia is a chef whose book is called Gran Cocina Latina. It's been a pleasure talking with both of you.
Thank you.
And now I want to eat a potato.
Yeah, let's go. Let's go out to eat.